Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Cicerino, and I am joined on the line now by one of my favorite people to have on the podcast. We've had him on a few times before, and with the Survivor finale coming up, we want to get in all the Survivor we can right now. Here he is, Gordon Holmes. Gordon, how are you doing this morning, buddy?
One of your favorite people.
What? Oh. Do you want to be the favorite person?
I am flattered just being one of. That is, I appreciate that.
Oh, no, absolutely. You are the perhaps I would tell you that you are number one of the non-Survivor rankings, and I think that the listeners like you too. And it's a tough crowd.
Rob, I don't mean to point fingers, but I think you're sucking kneecaps.
What? How dare you? You're more beloved than Frank Clark, even.
Oh, wow, that is quite an honor.
Yes. So Gordon, of course, is the curator of the Survivor Hall of Fame, among other things, as a writer for Xfinity. Is it TV or com?
It's XfinityTV.com.
Okay. See, now you understand where I can get the confusion from.
Yes, it's actually changed quite a few times since I've been working there, so I have the same problems.
Yeah. So, Gordon, you write about Survivor. You talk to the people who are booted off every week. You write a power rankings column with Sash so far this season. Who is winning in the battle between you and Sash?
Had to go there. Sash has been kicking my ass. It hasn't been close. I feel like every season there's usually a moment where somebody slips up and you can gain up some ground, but no, Sash has consistently been on top of his game. I don't think there's been a single vote out that he has not been really close to picking it. So yeah, there's going to be another one on the site Monday, and please check it out. But yeah. The odds of me catching up to him have absolutely, that's not going to happen. He is the Power Rankings champion for Survivor Redemption Island. I'm conceding right now on your podcast.
Now, with all due respect, Gordon, I would think that the power rankings would be relatively easy to do, considering that this has been a pretty straightforward run for the past 5 or 6 weeks, with Boston Rob 1, and then basically, you know, like, it's only about who gets voted off, right? You're not picking who gets kicked off Redemption Island?
Well, if you pick the person that stays on Redemption Island, you get a bonus point. So, but I don't think he and I have ever actually picked different people, because it's pretty much been a straight Elrod sweep.
Yeah. So how has he opened up such a big lead against you? And I know he was very much in the David Murphy camp of putting David Murphy very high on the power rankings. How did this happen?
I think part of it has to do with, I reached a point where I realized it's going to be some pretty obvious votes for the time being. So I need to make some maybe more outlandish picks and hope to catch up. Maybe there'll be a surprise. There wasn't. It's like, you know, when a gambler gets behind and they're yeah, like, okay, well, I'm going to bet big here because I got to make up my money. That's what I was doing.
You're chasing it.
I was indeed. It was foolish, and now I'm paying the price. So, again, Sash is your Survivor Redemption Island Power Rankings champion. And it's sad because there have been times, I'm actually, not counting this, I'm 2 for 2. I lost to Charlie Herschel. I lost to Taj. I beat Coach, and I beat an all-star team of survivors, including one Mr. Robert Cesternino. there was never a point for me to catch up, and don't think I'm taking away from his victory, because it is impressive, and he's a hell of a talent. But yeah, this one just got away from me. Very sad.
What was the last week on your power rankings that Boston Rob was not in the top spot?
I have never had Boston Rob in my top spot.
What? Well, this is why you're not winning.
No, it only counts who gets voted out. And Boston Rob should never feel safe, because going into this, I said there's no way Rob or Russell. Russell was in this show. There's no way Rob or Russell could win, because there would always be a target on their backs. And I still feel that, like, if Grant or somebody wants to actually win this game, they would make a move. I highly doubt that happening, especially with him still holding onto that immunity idol. That was always my, if Rob by some freak accident goes, that's where I'm going to gain up some ground, because Sash has had him very near the top, but that has never happened, and I have absolutely no faith that will happen at any point.
So yeah, so this was your main strategic flaw in that you're hoping for Boston Rob to be voted out by this batch of players.
Yes.
And I like how you prefaced it by saying that if Grant is actually playing the game.
Yeah, that
that remains to be seen.
Right. You have hope for him because he does things like he gives Andrea cake and you think, okay, well, it's a good idea. Like, don't let her feel safe.
Right.
And no, not at all. Not even a little bit. Oh, I wanted to say this before we got too far into this. We have discussed how awful my memory is, which is true. And my girlfriend likes to joke that I have 5 stories and I tell them over and over again. What I'm going to need from you is if you start hearing a story that I've told on this podcast, you got to break out that bell.
I'll actually use the taboo buzzer. You'll hear this sound.
Okay.
And that'll mean that we've heard a story already before on the podcast.
Well, did I tell you about the time I single-handedly won a immunity challenge?
In Nicaragua pregame?
Yeah, I'm testing you. Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, all right. Okay. Never mind. Oh, I do love to tell that story.
Yeah. So, this is a good segue because we're talking about Boston Rob a little bit. And people brought up on the Rob Has a Podcast Facebook fan page a couple of weeks back about the Survivor Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And as curator of the Survivor Hall of Fame, people wanted to know how differently would the Survivor Hall of Fame voting had gone should you decide to have the brainstorm to have a Survivor Hall of Fame at this point rather than following Heroes versus Villains.
Well, I listened to when you...
Or I'm sorry, that was actually, it was during Nicaragua.
Okay. So I listened to when you and Nicole discussed this, and the way the voting went down was Poverty was by far the most votes, so that wouldn't have changed, obviously. Boston Rob was second. He received all of the votes from the voting committee, myself, Dalton Ross, Jeff Probst, etc. He received votes from everybody except for one person. That was me. And Russell, I believe, came in third and had received maybe 6 of the 8 available votes that were from the voting committee. So, I mean, it wouldn't have affected, obviously, Parvati, Richard Hatch, or Sandra Diaz-Twine. I think obviously this season would help Rob's case just because with the exception of maybe Tom Westman in Palau, there has never been anybody who's dominated a season this way. And it's going to be a shame when he loses to whoever comes back from Redemption Island. It's going to be a crime, actually. Russell, yes. I think maybe it would have affected him in that he had one really dominant game, didn't win. And the only reason he was allowed to run rampant in Heroes Villains is because people didn't know what to expect from him. So people could make that argument. I still think he probably would have made it in just because the difference between 5th place and 6th place was so great.
I agree 100%. I think that it'd still be the same 5 people, but I think the order would be reshuffled.
Yes.
And I think at this point, if you did the voting now, I actually think it would be Boston Rob by a landslide, like a considerable gap between Rob and Parvati. And then it would be interesting to see if Russell still held down that 3 spot. But it's between Richard Hatch in jail and Sandra not being back on the show. It would be interesting if Richard Hatch had a really strong showing on The Celebrity Apprentice, if he perhaps could have overtaken Russell at this point if you were to redo the voting.
I'm not sure how you compare selling pizza to manipulating people on an island. But, I mean, there's got to be some kind of way to break that down. So you're right.
Yeah, if Richard, Richard was basically the Christina Kell of Celebrity Apprentice, in that he had such a strong first episode, but he just never, was not long for this world.
I was it you that said that reality people don't have the money to compete on Celebrity Apprentice?
I have said that. That amazed me. I don't know if I was the only person.
I remember when he couldn't raise any money in the art show. I was like, just like Rob said, this is amazing.
Well, it really does come down to on Celebrity Apprentice of who has the most connections. And sometimes they have these challenges where it's like, all right, call your rich friends. Let's see the money. And, you know, it's unless you are Carrie Underwood, there's not a lot of people that come out of reality TV that have these kind of connections. Like, I guess maybe some of these cooking shows, probably there are guys that have some connections with something. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, not much there. That's why they're on reality TV shows in the first place. If they had connections, they wouldn't have to go on a reality show.
But yes, I was very impressed with your prognostication skills in that matter.
Unfortunately, it's a blessing and a curse. Sometimes I don't like what I see in the future. But I do feel like even this season with Boston Rob, I definitely felt like I definitely saw good things on the horizon for Boston Rob. And I even think I said preseason I thought he would make it to the end but not win. But I'm... You know, I talked about this a little bit with Jeff Pittman in the last podcast that we did on True Dork Times, mm-hmm. That I'm starting to think that maybe there is a scenario where Boston Rob can win this thing. And I think it involves having Ashley in the final three.
Okay. The thing I've said this, is to for you and I to sit here and say that there's these opportunities, and this is going to be my third time actually using this joke, is trying to decide what's going to happen with Survivor this season, especially with the power rankings, has been like playing a game of Calvin Ball. Are you familiar with Calvin Ball from Calvin and Hobbes?
No.
It was literally a game they made where they made up the rules on the fly. And that's how I feel about this, is we're like, if he can take Ashley to a final three, and we don't know when someone's coming back for Redemption Island, if they're coming back at three or what's going to happen there. I assume we're going to go into the finale, four people on Redemption, four people in the game. So does the person, who knows, like, did they come back at five? Did they come back at three? If they come back at three, that person's a millionaire, unless it's somebody like Ashley. If Matt or Mike come back at three, they're millionaires. That's just the end of the story. Yeah. Too many people, like the attitude nowadays has just gotten so much that if you voted me out, you're mean, or things like that, or if you were the leader, or if you're mean, like that seems to be what it is. I even surfaced this question to Steve. I said, now with Boston Rob, do you respect him or do you resent him? And he said, I respect how he ran the game, but they resent that he didn't get to play part of the game. And if that affects your vote, which is so foreign to how I think people like you and I appreciate the game. Whereas mm-hmm. if I was Steve, and Boston Rob done to me, I would respect the hell out of that, and Rob would have my vote. Where I feel like a lot of these voters aren't going to have David. I think will, but a lot of the others I feel are gonna. Who was nice to me? Who do I want to have a million things like that that I wouldn't think about if I was voting?
How was Steve when you talked to him?
He I always try to start my interviews off with a joke. And they don't they don't always make it into what I actually write. And that I usually know how to take the interview from there.
Yeah.
And it was just the flat, it just dud. It just like silence, didn't get it, didn't. I was like, all right, straight interview, let's do this.
Yeah, I had a similar experience.
I mean, nice enough guy. I've always said the amount of survivors I do not like, you could count on like one finger. And no, I'm not gonna say who it is.
Ooh,
but
can you say man or a woman?
It's a man.
Okay, interesting.
But yeah, like I normally have just a wonderful time.
It's not me, is it?
I wasn't gonna say it, but since we've reached that point, yes.
Oh,
what
man.
Out of the 300 survivors, what are the odds that you would pick the one male?
I went right to it
that I have issue with. so yeah, like again, like even people that like. Are jerks on the show. I have a good time with when I talk to them.
Yeah.
Like like Randy Bailey. Like I adore Randy Bailey. Like he seems like he's very gruff on the show and some interviews, but like no, like I think he's a straight shooter and I enjoy talking to him.
Yeah.
So just but you kind of got to set the tone, and if it's not there, then don't push it and let's just talk about the show.
Yeah, I think I can appreciate the hilarity of just about every single survivor. And I think I actually, I don't know if the inverse is true, where I don't think that every survivor necessarily likes me, but I do think I could find something redeeming to talk about with just about every, probably every person that's been on the show.
All right, now, Rob, now what is it about you that people wouldn't like? And I know I have my list of reasons, because you're the only survivor I don't like. But
what is it about other survivors that
how are you rubbing people the wrong way besides me? I know why you're rubbing
well me. I'm because I make a show a podcast where I talk about survivors and I make fun of people. It I like to think I'm laughing with the other survivors, mm-hmm. but I can certainly see how a lot of times I even think that people don't necessarily even hear what I say, but heard through a third party. Oh, did you hear what Rob said about you? And, you know, I think I'm saying all of it with a smile on my face. You just can't see it because it's a radio show.
Right. I've had survivors that have had issues with some of the things I've said.
Yeah.
But I mean, as long as you back it up, I don't, I mean, they're welcome to stay angry with you. But I mean, if it's, I always try to make sure everything I say in my recaps and whatnot are fair. Especially like last week with the, or 2 weeks ago with the Philip Steve blow up. Like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously Philip, I mean, you might think he's crazy. I don't mean that in a racial way. He obviously is drawing from some experience, and that's why I kind of, I'm going to suck Probst's kneecaps a little bit. That's such a weird term. Just the way he handled it was just amazing. And he's right. Like that did come from somewhere, and that is valid to him. Mm-hmm. So therefore it should be valid to the group.
How do you think Philip is going to deal with like post-Survivor Philip? Do you think he's a good sport about everything? Do you think that he is, you know, sort of like maintains about, you know, like, how do you think his attitude is following the show?
My favorite thing about Philip is when I go on location, I always kind of dream that everybody gets dysentery or something like that, and they need to put the press into the game. Something happens to all, nothing horrible. Is dysentery horrible? I don't know diseases.
I think it's pretty horrible.
Is it okay? Something less horrible. Something that they won't let them go out, and they're like, we need to fill these slots. What's Gordon up to for the next month and a half? And then they plug me right in. That's why, right. I don't know if you know this, but the press makes alliances.
Oh.
If we ever get thrown into the game, Drew Morehouse and I from E are going to the final two. Was that the buzzer?
Yeah. I think so.
Oh, okay. Good. I'm glad you're on top of that. But the strategy I had thought of was you play the game and you're yourself, right, throughout the entire game. And then if you get to the final three, you say, now, I know you all think you know Gordon Holmes, but Gordon Holmes doesn't even exist. I know, right? My name is Sean Owens. I'm an accountant. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. I have a wife. I have two kids. The whole reason I created this Gordon Holmes persona was to get to the end. So, yes, I lied to you nonstop, but that was to get to this moment, and now I'm being honest. And again, this is just if I got to the end and everybody hated my guts, so they could be like, oh, I can't believe what an amazing performance. Hurrah. And then, of course, and then once I'm a millionaire, I'd be like, just kidding, Gordon Holmes exists and he's a jerk.
Yeah.
So I kind of think if Philip at the finale was like, I put you all on, he has a British accent. He's like, it was all on and hurrah. And
he takes the feather out of his...
Sorry for accusing you of being a racist, Stephen.
He takes the feather out.
Yeah. Also, another thing is the thing with the... he's a secret agent, so he can tell when people are lying. I had the same idea where I'm a psychic, and I can tell what people are thinking. If people are going to try to vote me off, I'll know it, so don't even try. Of course, that would never, ever work, but like it's the exact same thing. So it's possible that Philip just has ridiculous strategies like I do.
Yeah,
but not probably.
So much that I love about this. One, it's very much of a Ben Linus strategy.
Yes.
Two, I think the problem might be everybody might, even if you did a good job, if there's 8 votes for Sean, I don't know if that might be confusing. If okay, that's 3 votes for Gordon, 4 votes for Sean. So that could create some confusion in the voting booth. Yeah, but I do love this.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. I hope that Philip does this. I'm dying to know what Philip is going to do at this final tribal council if he does have some ace up his sleeve.
Well, he's got something he's going to say to Rob, and I try to figure out what do you say? Okay, Rob's played the game. That's one. Rob's wife has $1 million. That's another. Rob's played the game 4 times. Like, there's what's this angle he has that could possibly turn the jury towards Philip, but not only against Rob, who's played just and like I'm like I actually really enjoyed Rob in All Stars, But this is far better.
I'm glad that for one of us did.
Okay, right. I appreciate you did not. But like, I thought Rob played a hell of a game in All-Stars. He's playing a better game now, which just blows my mind. Because I was one of the ones who said there's no possible way you can put these two guys in a game and have them get further than the merch. It just will not happen. And I was wrong.
Could I say this? I know I've said it myself that maybe this is Boston Rob's best game, but if I'm going to look at it on paper, I wonder maybe was All-Stars, could that be better than this one, only just for the degree of difficulty?
That's a good point, but I mean, I'm of the belief that if you're playing, the best Survivor game should not involve needing to win immunities or needing things like immunity idols or things like that. If you're playing your social game right, it shouldn't matter what happens at challenges. And maybe that's naive to think that somebody could do that. But that's just really what I believe. If you're on top of your game the way you are, and honestly, I don't think Rob even needs this immunity idol.
No.
It's amazing. Like, how is this even possible that these six people get to that tribal council last week and all of them think they're safe? Granted, only one of them has to actually be not safe, but at the same time, that Andrew was that on board. Like, how does he have this grasp on them? What, like, or could it be a situation where they're thinking, well, no one's ever going to give Rob $1 million, so I'm gonna stick with him? Which was
I thought of that too, that maybe they all of them think in their head, like, oh, this is Rob is the perfect person to bring to the end because nobody will vote for him. And so they all feel like, oh, that would be the best spot to be in, sitting next to Boston Rob at the end, because people aren't going to vote for him because he's been on four times.
Yeah, I mean, that isn't an angle. But at the same time, that's why I never understood why Zapatero went for Russell so quick. If I was on Zapatero, I would have become part of the Dumbass Girl Alliance immediately. Like, I would have been the first one signing on that. I know he draws, like, he's got the sign-up sheet in the sand. I would be the first one.
Hey, who wants to be in my alliance?
That guy turns blonde people into millionaires. Well, that's not true. Sanders wasn't blonde.
Yeah. But he's the rainmaker, Russell Hantz.
Well, the funny thing is this season was like, they were like, oh, it's Russell and Rob again, which I didn't have a problem with. But I like the fact that it's possible that Matt could win, which would just be like a rerun of Nicaragua, or a Natalie could ride coattails to the end, and that could be a rerun of Survivor Samoa.
I think the Matt Fabio daily double would probably be the most fun. That the two Spicoli guys from back to back season. This is officially the new archetype of what a Survivor winner should look like. It's, you know,
when they pieced the faces together of all the winners.
Yeah,
and it kind of looked like you.
Yeah, it did.
Now they're just going to have a picture of Elrod. It's going to be like,
kind of looks like
you want to win Survivor? There you go.
I think the funniest moment could possibly be if Fabio meets Matt Elrod for the first time and is under the impression that they've cloned him. Like, whoa, get out of here. No. Like, yeah, they cloned you.
They actually were looking for a winner that wouldn't get arrested on a skateboard, so they infused him with some god.
No way, bro. Yes, it's true. So I won't make fun of Fabio. I know that he's your favorite winner.
He absolutely, of all time, only because he's from St. Louis.
Yeah. With the Redemption Island people, do you think it's fair that they don't go to tribal council? Like, the people on the jury, they go, they see all the tribal councils, but the people that are on Redemption Island, they aren't seeing the tribal councils. Don't you think that the Redemption Island people should go to tribal council and see what's happening?
Oh, that's a good question. I always
seems weird.
I think that kind of kills the moment where the person shows up at Redemption Island.
Yeah,
like, oh, it's who knew that Steve would be next? Except, you know, clearly Steve was next. I don't know. I don't have as big a problem with that, just because I mean I assume they hear everything as soon as that person shows up. I don't know. That is an interesting point. That I don't know.
Yeah. Do you think we have a good sense of what goes on a day in the life on Redemption Island?
No, not at all. I assume I think their a day at Redemption Island is just sitting around talking about, your home life or whatever. Because, like, what drives me nuts about Redemption Island now is when it was, all right, Matt's going to sit here until someone shows up, and then the next morning they're going to duel. Like, that was, like, it was like they were surviving by themselves, and that was really kind of like Janu. Was that her name? In Plow?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. Like, that's tough. Whereas now it's three guys chilling out for 2 days.
It's like a party. There's like a camping
trip.
There's
no stress. They don't have to worry about voting each other out. They don't have to, like, it's literally just like a camping trip until the next person shows up. Yeah. So I've kind of turned on Redemption Island. I'll give anything a shot. And I kind of dug it where, like, you know, this poor kid's living by himself for 3 days and then has to do this battle. Now, just being the third runner up in a 4-person contest isn't noble. It isn't impressive. It's just it's really odd, and I think having more than two people there has really thrown off the dynamic.
Why do you think they're doing this? Why do you think they're having 4 people on Redemption Island? Like, what is the mindset of production to have 4 people on Redemption Island at once?
I think if I'm a huge fan of, say, Andrea's
right.
Because, you know, like, I mean, you've been on message boards. People say, well, now that this person's out, I don't have to watch anymore because that was my person.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say that. I don't watch the show that way. But I all the time will get those kinds of comments. And I don't know if anybody actually does, but I hear it a lot. Whereas in this case, we're going to get to the end and there's going to be 8 people with a shot at $1 million, where normally it would be 5, or even longer ago, was it 3 in Australia? They had a final 3. Or something ridiculous like that going into the last episode. So
yeah, I think the last episode started with only 3 people.
Yeah, so I can see where they might want to make it make that more interesting. I don't know. I think Redemption Island it's really been just made the season feel weird, just from a couple different standpoints. And that it used to be like, this is a big moment when you're voted out. Like, that's like a big moment. And the next day, you'd come talk to me. Like, not that that's a big deal to anybody, but like, I could ask you questions about what happened, what people saw last night. Now I'm talking to people. Like, say if Matt had been eliminated, I'd be asking him questions about Rob voting him off. Then people saw it 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's just yeah, a weird dynamic. And then when somebody leaves Redemption Island, it's not as dramatic. It's during the day. It's not about them. It's usually about who's staying. Like, the only time they really gave us something to care about or to feel was when Julie was voted out and they talked about her foreclosure. Like, that was like a real moment. Whereas now it's just kind of like, well, Steve, bring your buff. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. The only good thing that Redemption Island has given us this season was Matt came back and got voted out of the game a second time. But other than that, Redemption Island has not brought much to the table as far as making the show a more entertaining show, in my opinion.
Right, right. And when they first heard about it, I had been worried that, okay, say Grant gets voted out next, and then he comes back into the game like right away. Like, he's only spends a couple days there. I don't know. I think it can work. I think they can tweak it. I think they will learn a lot. If Redemption Island continues on, I think they will learn a lot from this. I don't think it'll be the same. I think it just kind of lost its steam.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not against the concept. I think it has promise. Just some of the choices this year didn't pan out.
Yeah, I have to say, I do think this season as a whole took a little bit of a turn without Russell. Like, I think when you had Rob and Russell in the mix, I thought that was good. But around the same time that Russell went out of the game, that was when Rob's team really started dominating. I think that was really the point where, for like a few weeks, it was like, oh, this is so much better than Nicaragua. But I feel like Nicaragua is almost, to use Philip's term, become the redheaded stepchild. That this season, no matter what happened, oh, it's so much better than Nicaragua. But do you really feel that way? Is this season head and shoulders above Nicaragua?
I have to admit, I'm very worried that CBS is going to realize that when I go to location, they get a subpar season.
Yeah.
I hope. Yeah. They might figure that out, that it's actually my fault. Nicaragua is always going to be kind of stained for the Medallion of Power didn't get over the way they wanted it to. The old tribe I assume they were hoping that people would root for the older people, but they weren't a very likable bunch once they got rid of Jimmy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nyanka quitting. It was just a real, they set it up for success. Coming off of Heroes versus Villains, so I think in hindsight, Nicaragua isn't as bad as people think it is.
Yeah, I think every season that on, people are like, oh, the worst season ever. But then in hindsight, like, oh, that wasn't that bad.
I feel like every season, like since I started covering Survivor professionally during Survivor Gabon. But I've been watching it for as long as it's been on the air, since the first season. And I feel like every season it's either the best or the worst. I think there was a lot of hype coming in this one. I think Probst talked it up a lot. And I don't think it's a bad season. I think it's confusing and you're not quite sure how to feel about it. But I'm all for them trying new things. Like, I know a lot of people are purists, which... I think the game evolves. I think, again, like, you evolved the way the game is played. So did Fair Play. So did Russell Hantz. And I think, but production is going to do those kinds of things too. I appreciate when they take chances and they're not all going to be home runs. They're not all going to be hidden immunity idols. And hidden immunity idols didn't even work properly the first right out of the bat. It took some tweaking. I think Redemption Island has promise. They should go back to the drawing board, take what works, fix what didn't, and then maybe give it another shot.
Okay. Gordon, I know one of the things that you had said that you wanted to talk about was the difference between certain players on their first time being a Survivor contestant.
Yes.
And then coming off differently the second time that they were on the show. Did you want to elaborate on that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. My girlfriend got me into The Amazing Race, and I was a big Kent and Vixen fan. And they came back for the All-Star season, and they weren't as much fun. They were always complaining. It really affected the way people viewed them, including myself. I'm sure they're wonderful people, just that they're portrayed differently. So I had tweeted, like, is there we need a term for a character that is viewed favorably one season and then comes back and is viewed unfavorably. I had used examples. Rupert kind of had the shine come off of him during Heroes Villains. Same with Colby. Same with James, actually. Stephanie LaGrosa took a bit of a hit when she...
Oh, yeah. She might be the best example. Yeah.
Yeah. So I tweeted this, and somebody tweeted, is that being Cesternino'd?
No.
Which I disagreed with. I thought you were more Sereed in that you weren't allowed to come back and play your same game because people had seen it before. That's different.
Like, yeah, I wouldn't... You could say even I was Purple Kellied, but I don't think that I came back and was like... First of all, let's be honest... not beloved the first time through. So let's let that be clear. But I don't think I came back and was like seen as a villain or despised the second time around. If anything, you didn't see very much of me the second time around. But I don't think that's necessarily the right analogy.
Right. I feel like the people that liked you in Amazon still liked you in All Stars. People that didn't like you still didn't like you. Whatever. It's just you didn't get a chance to play your game because people knew what you were capable of. Same with Suri.
Yeah. Hello, I was playing with the greatest survivor of all time.
It's true. First ballot Hall of Famer.
And his wife. Hello.
So, yeah, I was trying to come up with a term, and Colbead could be one, something like that. But it was just like somebody who, you know, they came. And the opposite, Boston Rob, because Boston Rob wasn't that big a deal before All Stars. And then he ran the gamut. He's still kind of a jerk. Or viewed as a jerk. I don't know the man. I've only talked to him a few times. And then he came back for Heroes Villains, and Boston Rob is bar none the most popular survivor coming out of that season, where he used to be, I mean, obviously he was a villain going into it and like the mm-hmm. biggest hero coming out. So there needs to be some kind of term for this in the future. I just haven't thought of it yet.
Well, what about to delve into your wrestling terminology? Is there anybody that, and I could think of maybe a couple people, and everybody knows, or I don't know if everybody knows, some people know that Gordon Holmes is a big-time wrestling fan and reporter.
Yes.
As far as Boston Rob goes, to use the wrestling terms, he definitely started out, he was a heel.
Yes.
But then he somehow has, even though he still does a lot of the same sort of heel-type things, he's just totally gotten over. Is there a wrestler?
Oh yeah, he's like, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin was the biggest villain in the WWE in the mid-90s, and then the fan sensibilities changed towards him. He didn't change as a character. He still cursed and flipped middle fingers and hit a Stone Cold Stunner, but the fans started to like it. So, I mean, that would be an example of Boston Rob there. Like,
Could that be more Russell, though?
See, but I think the fans turned on Russell. I think the fans liked Russell more during Samoa, and then Heroes versus Villains started to turn on him.
Hmm. That's interesting. What about The Rock? Could the same be said about The Rock? Like, I feel like when he was working for Vince McMahon, he was a bad guy at one point.
Well, wrestling is very similar to Survivor in the sense that, and in a lot of different entertainment forms, in that there's the people that like the show and they watch it every Wednesday, and that's as far as it goes, and they like their good guys. And then there's the people that are like the hardcores that like go to the message boards and things like that, and they delve deeper into it, and maybe they appreciate strategy more, or the history of the game, or the purity of how it works. Whereas, you know, The Rock runs off and he does his movies and he leaves wrestling for a while, and that kind of annoys the hardcore.
And that was like Boston Rob going on The Amazing Race.
Right. That's like Boston Rob, because like sometimes it drives the hardcores crazy that somebody has like a mainstream kind of sheen to them. And that's the same with Boston Rob. They're like, oh, well, so many people like Boston Rob, I'm not going to like him because I know the truth and I know that he did this horrible thing, or that he doesn't play as strong a game as, and then they'll name someone obscure, like an indie band that no one's heard of.
Like Rob Cisternino. Yeah.
Right. Like Rob Cisternino.
Yeah.
So many, my favorite thing to do is to compare anything to pro wrestling. It drives my girlfriend absolutely nuts because she can't stand wrestling.
I enjoy it. I mean, I'm not on top of the modern day wrestling as much as you know, people who have watched wrestling in the last 5-10 years. Mm-hmm. But I love to compare anything to anything, basically.
So maybe going forward, that's like, you know, Rob did a face turn during Heroes Villains. Face is a term for good guy. Heel is a term for bad guy. So right. he was a bad guy. He became a good guy. He did a face turn.
Because he was up against a bigger bad guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And the fan sensibility had changed to the point where it used to be, if you had an alliance, you were a bastard. Like Richard Hatch, the worst thing he did was start an alliance. That's not such a big deal anymore. Everybody does it. Whereas back in the day, if you poked somebody in the eye, you were the biggest bad guy ever. Nowadays, if you hit someone with a steel chair, like, you're going to be popular for that. So that's what happened. Rob didn't change. The fans changed.
We changed.
Yeah.
Okay,
he's not a role model. Come on.
So I want to get into talking about some community, but let me just ask you one last Survivor thing. Do you have a pick for the winner of Survivor Redemption Island with a week left to go in this game for us?
Okay. I know who should win, and that's Rob.
Right.
And I don't see how anybody can objectively say that he has not outwitted, outlasted, and outplayed. But I mean, I also agree that like when they signed up, like the rules were set and these are the rules and it's a different game. So with that being said, I think it's extremely possible that Matt or Mike are going to come out of Redemption Island and win this game.
Wow.
I think, Stephen Fishbach had said that the game is flawed and the flaw is Ponderosa.
He has said that, yes.
Right, which I think is a brilliant statement. In that so much can happen outside of the game at that point. And I feel like what's happening at Redemption Island, what they meant for it to be, was like a punishment, and it's had the exact opposite effect. Like if you were an alpha male type that could do well, and these aren't really alpha male challenges, I guess. Just if you were someone who's good at that kind of puzzles and games and stuff like that, and you went to Redemption Island, you'd be fine for a while. You just have to be not the worst person there right now. You'll have to win your way in eventually. But it's just kind of like you're there. You're like, I'd ask Steve this. He says it's almost like a vacation from the game. You don't have to talk about the game at all. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is sit there and talk about who screwed you. Like, that's a good thing to do, like, because, I mean, it wins you sympathy, and they've all been screwed too, so you're going to have people to commiserate with, and then these people are going to be on the jury if unless they get back in the game, or you're going to be part of the jury. It's going to be a crime when Rob doesn't win. If I had to say who's going to win, I'd say whoever returns from Redemption Island, and right now that looks like Mike.
Yeah, I've said I've picked Matt, just because Mike seems like he's been so invisible the whole way through, I just can't imagine him coming back and doing well. But, I mean, I could see it.
That's actually one of the many flaws, I'll say, in my prognostication, is I never think about editing the way a lot of the hardcores do. Mm-hmm. And Randy Bailey, he helped pick the power rankings with Coach last season a little bit, and he kept mentioning, well, this person's not getting a winner edit, this person's not getting this edit, and I never think about that, and I guess I should more. But you're right, you're very much right in that Mike hasn't really had a chance to shine. But maybe, honestly, not much has happened with him between now and last week with him getting to with doing the most good for the most people,
right?
Whatever happened right. there. So yeah, you're probably right.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about one of our other favorite shows that you have been an evangelist about for quite some time, since the beginning. I had only gotten on board over Christmas break, and then I basically watched all of season one and season two to that point and have been maintained current. Well, I'm talking about Community, of course. And Community had part one of its two-part season finale going back to paintball. And I wanted to just talk about generally Community in general. What do you think about this season? Where did they go right or wrong this season? And I guess let's start with part one of the two-part finale back to paintball. Of course, paintball being the most famous Community episode ever, Modern Warfare from season one. So, you know, people have been asking for them to revisit paintball or stuff like paintball. And so they basically gave you an hour full of paintball here to end season two.
Now, Rob, am I responsible for you watching Community?
I'd say pretty much. I don't know if it's 100%, but yeah, there's a slice of the pie that is owed directly to you.
And are you responsible for Nicole watching Community?
Yes.
That warms my heart. And that, you know, you get your show and it's like a cusp show.
Yeah.
Like that's what Community is. And I don't get giddy when shows I like get renewed. But when Community got renewed, I was giddy. So any little bit I can do makes me feel good about myself. So even if it was just a little bit, I'm very excited to have the Sesterninos on board as Community fans.
Well, how about this? Do you have, for anybody who is listening to this that does not watch Community, can you give like 60 seconds or less on why people should watch Community or what is so unique about Community?
I don't know what's even unique about it. I just feel like sometimes something clicks with you, and Community clicked with me. It's easily my favorite show on television right now. It's maybe it's not for everybody. I wouldn't suggest my parents watch it. I think that maybe a lot of it would go over their heads. And honestly, this is a show that I watch it on Thursday when it airs, so it gets the ratings. And then as soon as I'm done with whatever I'm doing Thursday night, I will watch it again. And then the next day when I'm doing updates for Xfinity TV, I'll have it on my computer listening to it in the background and still pick up things. I assume this is how people felt about Arrested Development. I never got into, I confess, but like people, when they would talk about it, there's just so much to it and so enjoyable. And on top of that, Alison Brie is ridiculously hot. As in like five-star blazing hot. And,
okay.
And if Nicole Sesternino is to be believed, and I don't see why she shouldn't be, the guy that plays Jeff Winger, Joel McHale, also five-star hot. So yes. I don't know what more you can ask for than that.
Yeah, and what I like about Community, it's a show that is definitely created and made and produced by people who love TV as much as I do, and probably more. And, you know, there's a ton of things that, you know, from other TV shows that makes its way into Community. And it's also a, like a lot of other shows like The Simpsons and Parks and Rec and shows with and Family Guy have a very rich world in which the characters live in, where there's a lot of like inside jokes back to other things and recurring characters and stuff like that. So I always like that in a TV show.
I feel it's kind of in its wheelhouse now. I used to be a really big Office fan, and it's lost its way. I don't think they know exactly what they want to do with it or where they want to go with it. Whereas this, I just feel like rare. I can't think of an episode I've watched this season where I thought that I knew what they were going for, but they missed it. Like, they always seem to reach further than I think a show should reach, and then and achieve what they're looking to do. I just really can't say enough good things about it. Going back to your question about the paintball, Modern Warfare last year was probably the one that received the most notoriety, and it wasn't even in my book. Wasn't even the best one. It was still a great episode. But still, like, I preferred the chicken one, the chicken fingers one.
Chicken fingers, yes. I actually, I think that, yeah, modern, it's hard to pick one, but I've said that I think I may have enjoyed the chicken fingers episode more than the Modern Warfare, just because it was so well done. Mm-hmm. And the chicken fingers episode was a parody of mafia movies.
Right, I've heard the people say that they're concerned the community does too much with the parodies. I think they've done a good job balancing it out, and they do a good job of explaining it as they're doing it. Like when they did the bottle episode this season, explaining what it was, getting into it, and like it's my girlfriend teaches a course in television writing, and like every week there's a new thing. She's like, I can show this to my students and say this is how to formulate an episode of a sci-fi adventure or a mafia film like they're doing. Like they just do what they do so well, and they do so many varied things.
All right, so let's talk about the part one of the two-part season finale.
Yes.
A Fistful of Paintballs, part one, aired the other night, and then unfortunately it's going to be the end of season two of Community next Thursday. A Fistful of Paintballs, part two. Did you agree with the decision to go back to paintball?
Originally, when I first heard it, I would have rather them have tried something different, but then at the same time, I'm watching it with a big, stupid smile on my face. So, I mean, they must be doing something right.
Well, the twist on paintball was that this one is much more of it's supposed to be a Western, and it's a parody of Western things, as opposed to last year, which was, I don't know if it was necessarily it was more of like an action movie, mm-hmm. and this is more of a Western. And they brought in Josh Holloway, Sawyer, from Lost, one of our favorite shows, which I thought Sawyer was just okay.
I didn't feel like they gave him enough to do. I loved the interaction between him and Jeff, with Jeff being – it's almost like his character being there made for more funny than the actual character made for. Like Jeff Winger, his reaction to him not – like thinking that Josh Holloway isn't that attractive was just hilarious in my book, whereas Josh Holloway himself wasn't given as many opportunities to be hilarious.
Right. Yeah, I didn't think he was particularly great. Anything jump out at you as being particularly funny from Paintballs Part 1?
Well, I got to be honest, the way I rate my episodes of Community is based on how much Troy I get.
Yeah.
I didn't get a lot of Troy this episode. But what I got was gold. The point where they're getting their paintball supplies, and Jeff Winger's going off about how unattractive he thinks the Black Rider is. Was that the Dark Rider, the Black Rider?
I thought it was the Black Rider.
The Black Rider. And Troy goes, "You got a problem?" It's just every little, like, he takes like the ittiest, bittiest throwaway line and just injects it with so much goodness that I'm actually working on a piece for my personal blog, morewhatnot.com, where I'm ranking the top people on NBC Thursday nights. And this is a ridiculous idea.
Ooh.
because I used to really enjoy 30 Rock, and it's just really gotten away from what I enjoy.
I think 30 Rock has also had a lackluster season.
I kind of feel like my original intention was to do the 20 least funny characters on 30 Rock, which is
the 20 least funny characters on 30 Rock.
I know. And which is meaner than I like to get with my stuff. So instead I did the exact opposite. And it's like the 36 funniest characters on NBC on NBC's Thursday night, and there's not many 30 Rock characters in there, so hopefully it's not a subtle point that's being made. But yeah, Troy, he's like every week he just brings the goodness, and in episodes that center around him, I find I enjoy more. And that's not to say anything against the other characters; I think they all do fantastic work. But yeah, I need more Troy, so hopefully next week we'll pick up.
Whatever way you decide to go on that NBC Thursday night list, mm-hmm. That sounds like a podcast in my book.
Oh. And,
especially with the Survivor coming to a halt. Big Brother is 2 months away. it's, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a void that we're going to have to fill. And I would be totally down to do that. But now, will you be including outsourced characters on your list, or only on the not funny list?
I will be including outsourced. Like, it's the entire lineup that exists now, the five shows, 30 Rock, The Office, Parks and Recreation, Community, and Outsourced.
Will Paul Reiser be on the list?
No, he just didn't make it. It's a shame. Did you watch that show?
No.
Yikes. It was,
I watched about a minute of it at the end of a Community that I had recorded. I was like, ooh, this is not good at all.
Yeah, it was not a good time. But there are outsourced people on this list. Even though I'm not a big outsourced fan, like, it definitely has its bright spots.
Of the funniest people list?
Yes, of the top 36, I'd say maybe four or five of them are from outsourced.
Oh, do you have a launch date for this top 36 list?
Oh, goodness. I'd hope to have it done this weekend. But, you know, with the finale coming up, it kind of took a backseat. But I would anticipate it coming out. If I don't get it done tonight, then it's going to have to wait until after the finale. But we'll see.
Okay. Well,
stay tuned to my Twitter account. that could use some followers.
Even if it's only in a couple of weeks. I definitely would love to do that, a podcast covering your list.
Sure thing.
Two weeks ago I did with Johnny Fairplay, we covered the top 50 WWE superstars list.
Heard that.
And that came out back in like December. And it was a controversial list.
That was a very controversial list.
Well, I hope your list is as controversial.
Actually, it might be. We'll see. I usually post stuff on my blog and maybe 100 people see it. I need to be more, I got to pay more attention.
150, 160, possibilities are endless.
I know. I don't want a bunch of livid Pierce fans sending me hate mail.
And Frank Clark.
Well, I mean, honestly, I haven't gotten any negative feedback from Frank Clark yet. He did start following me on Twitter, and I don't want to rile him up, but I'm feeling a little bit left out, to be honest. Why does Steven Fischbach get all the attention? Come on, there's... now that I've said that, I'm gonna...
Probably. One of the interesting things I thought that came out of this episode with the paintball episode, and it really was a theme for season two, of how much of a villain Pierce has become to the Community group. Mm-hmm. Like, in season one, it really seemed like Professor Chang was the villain through a lot of the season. But then he sort of became part of the group. And then there was the weird moment at the end of the first episode where he sort of had like a Gollum / Schmeagol moment, where I thought that he was going to become the villain of the group. But it really didn't pan out so much, and Pierce just became a giant a-hole through most of season two of Community.
Yeah, I found that Community is like many shows, and that, you know, the pilot is much different than what it ends up being. Whereas, I don't know if you remember, originally Troy was like a jock who was kind of a jerk, and Annie never talked, and like it was like all different manner of things. And Pierce was kind of like the voice of reason. Like, he would have like dad moments with Jeff where he would be like, well, son, you gotta go with what you know, and like kind of be like that kind of like mentor kind of character. And they just went the absolute opposite direction, to the point where I think it turned off a lot of the fan base, and that like it was too ridiculous to think they would still hang out with this person based on that. That's why I kind of got a kick out of, during Fistful of Paintballs, that they had that vote as to whether or not to keep him on board, because that just seems like it would make sense that would be something that a group of people that have had to deal with this would do. But that, yeah, like he was the best part. My favorite part of the episode, I talked about catching things later. He goes, they're all having dinner, and he goes, am I really a villain? And there's a moment, and they'll do this a lot, where all seven people will talk at the same time. If you listen to it again, at one point, Abed says, you raped Clan Duquesne, which doesn't mean anything to anybody who hasn't watched the show, but if you go back to Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, Fat Neil is from Clan Duquesne, and at one point Pierce says, I rape your entire family, or something like that.
And yeah.
It's just like, again, like just to point out another one of these things that if you become a fan, like you'll catch up on. And maybe it's not selling it to say you got to watch a lot of Community to get into Community, but like I think it's absolutely worth people's
time. I did not catch that. I mean, let's recap a little bit of what Pierce did this season. He was a tremendous a-hole to Fat Neil.
Yes.
In the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons episode. Then in the they had to put on the drug play, which was I have the IMDb for Community season 2 about a celebrity pharmacology 212. He ruined the play that they were putting on for the kids. In intermediate documentary filmmaking, he acted as if he was dying and tempted everybody with different things to screw their lives up, including making Jeff believe that his father was coming to see him in a limousine. He's just been a real horrible person so far.
He ruined the secret garden.
Yes. With the trampoline, which I actually thought that might have been the worst episode of season 2 of Community.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of that one.
Yeah, did not think they did a good job there.
I'm always interested in how far you can push a character until a fan base will just be done with them. And I think they're really testing the boundaries of this with Pierce. And a lot of people said, like, why would they remain friends with this person? I think it, but it pays off in things like when they did Dungeons and Dragons, and like in the end, he was the one that saved Fat Neil. But yeah, I think they even had fun with it during the episode where they had the election, where he was just for no reason going after that one girl because she wouldn't let him pen Vicky.
Yes.
So yeah, I do like it that they're testing these boundaries, and I have to think they know what they're doing, and the fact that it hasn't gotten to a point where, and to use wrestling terms, I think I've heard it's called X-Pac heat, where it's not, I hate this person. It's, I don't want this person on my TV.
X-Pac heat?
It's a term I believe has been tossed around called heck, where a good bad guy, you want to pay to see them get beat up. A bad guy, you just don't care. You just don't want them on your TV.
Right.
Whereas they've done a good job of getting Pierce the right kind of heat. Heat, a wrestling term for crowd reaction.
See, I refer to that as 1-2-3 kid heat.
Yes.
Where has Magnitude been the past few weeks? There was a point in the middle of the season where new character Magnitude with the catchphrase pop pop was everywhere. He was in every episode for about 3 or 4 weeks straight, and now we have not seen Magnitude in the last little bit.
This is part of the reason I'm fully behind the show, in that when they were talking about making Chang part of the group, and I thought that would be really bad for the dynamic. And they've done a good job about not including him. Same thing with Magnitude. First time I saw Magnitude, it's like, oh my god, Magnitude's the best. Second time I saw Magnitude, I like Magnitude. Third time I was like, maybe a little too much Magnitude. And then I think they've shut him down for a little while. He can be a character like Starburns that, like, when they need a punchline, he can pop in.
Yeah,
no pun intended. But other than that, like, I think they've done a really fantastic job about knowing the boundaries of these characters, when to use them, when not to use them, when to pull back. And I think Magnitude has been pulled back on for the time being.
Who is the best peripheral character on Community?
I got to say Fat Neil.
Really? I'm not a big fan of Fat Neil.
The reason I like Fat Neil so much isn't so much that I think the actor's a good actor, and he's fine. He's a good actor. It's that the way the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons went at the end, it was so uplifting to me that seeing him in the community, seeing him doing well, seeing him flirting with
Vicky.
Was it Vicky or Nikki?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Vicky. And
seeing him flirting with Vicky even, I just find it uplifting. I know it sounds ridiculous to come from to feel this way from a sitcom, but seeing him doing well makes me feel good.
Yeah.
So I'd have to say, yeah, like, absolutely, Fat Neil.
I still love Leonard, and I think that Leonard was getting probably too much exposure, and maybe it was the beginning of this season where Pierce started hanging out with Leonard. There was, like, one very heavy Leonard episode, and I didn't like Leonard in that particular episode, but they've gotten Leonard back to the point where he's just good for one, he's almost like Creed on The Office. He's good for one solid great line an episode.
Okay, well, who haven't we seen in a while that you would like to see?
Out of the peripheral characters.
Yes.
You know, there was a point also mid-season where I felt like we didn't see Dean Pelton for a while.
Okay.
And I also feel like there was also a good portion of the season where we did not see a lot from Chang. And I wonder how much he was filming The Hangover, or if that was – if they filmed The Hangover before the season even started. But definitely I enjoy all of them. There's not one particular person that pops in or out or like Magnitude. I guess Magnitude I've been missing.
I'm going to throw this one out there from season one. I kind of missed Vaughn.
Oh, yeah. Well, he moved away at the end of season
one. He moved to Delaware, so he should be near me. But like Vaughn's band and the rapper that would do the clean raps about drinking a glass of pee, I got to admit, I miss Vaughn's band.
Yeah, there's also another nerd on the show that they use very well, and I can't remember what his name is, but he's always very funny.
Yes, he was dancing in the saloon.
Yes. Do you know what his name is? Is it Rich? Is that it?
Are you on IMDb? I don't.
I'm on.
You can't expect me to remember the names of the people on Survivor this season, much less.
Yeah,
the way I do my recaps is I literally, the TV's on, my laptop's in my lap, and for the first six episodes, I have cheat sheets of pictures of people with their names under them. Because my goal is to do Survivor, like my recaps, like you're sitting on the couch watching with me and I'm making terrible jokes, which okay. is what it reads like. So I'm literally, as I'm watching.
That's like this podcast.
Exactly. Yes. And I don't know if you ever check the timestamps, they're literally up like an hour after the show ends, which explains the typos.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you can't expect me to remember someone's name.
Yeah.
Or the stories I've told.
Yeah. One of the community episodes that I thought was really well done from a couple of weeks ago was the episode that was done like it was a recap episode.
Yes.
But it was all new clips. I thought that was actually one of the better ones.
I had actually participated in a internet web series called The League, and I was given the opportunity to write one of them. They did one based on wrestling, and the League was based on it was a two hitmen that were like bumbling. One was really dumb, and one was really mean. I was the mean one, and they asked me to write the one about wrestling because with my background. So the way the show works, and I always kind of ribbed the producer about this, is it reminded me of The Family Guy a lot because there was a lot of flashbacks. Like, hey, remember that time we did this? And then it's something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I ended up writing this entire wrestling script and then was talking to the producer, and he was saying, yeah, people were complaining because there weren't enough flashbacks in this episode. I realized I hadn't written a single flashback into this wrestling episode. So I got the idea in my head. I don't even remember the Seinfeld that they did backwards.
Yes, of course.
I had come up with the idea to do...
You can stuff your saris in a sack, mister.
Yes. Good night, Jagdish. I had come up with the idea to do an episode that started and ended in the same scene, and everything was either going into or coming out of a flashback.
Okay.
So I thought I was a genius, and it came off okay. And then they did the exact same thing in Community at the one point where they were talking about how they had fought, and it went up a series of flashbacks and out of a series of flashbacks. I was so mad.
Yeah, it was really well done.
It was so much better than when I did. I was so mad.
Do you think that we're ever going to see more about the St. Patrick's Day adventure that the Community gang had?
Well, I've seen enough movies to know that if you pop the back of a raft, it goes faster. I honestly hope so, because a friend of mine is... We always have the Britta versus Annie debate, and I'm solidly... In Team Annie. That sounds bad. I'm on Team Annie.
Well, that sounds worse.
I'm a member of Team Annie. Is that better?
That was just
crass. And he kind of wavers. And then he went solidly Team Britta after that flashback episode because Britta was in her underwear and looked lovely.
Okay, let's break this down because and chances are that at Nicole Loves Shoes will not ever be listening to an hour and 3 minutes into the third Survivor podcast of the week with Community attached at the end.
Is it because of me?
No, it's because she's
hurtful.
It's not, you know, going back and listening to podcasts she wasn't on is not one of her hobbies.
Hurtful.
So, all right, Annie versus Britta. Now, are we taking the character into account?
Yes. This does not have to deal with Jillian Jacobs or Allison Brie. This is about the characters.
Okay, but So, like, for instance, I don't particularly love the Britta character. So we're not talking just aesthetically.
Yes.
Okay.
We're talking, well, if these two characters existed in real life, which one would you be into?
Well, there are certain things that appeal to me about the Britta character, but all in all, the Britta getting on her high horse would probably be way too much for anybody to handle.
I feel like I've dated some Brittas in my day. And while it's fun at first, it can be an issue later. So I'd like to try. Like, I don't think I've ever dated somebody as not like Annie, just kind of like, you know, how she is, like, just like, I don't want to say innocent, but like different.
I have found
now I'm hoping my girlfriend doesn't listen to this podcast.
I have found that the people who are like Britta in real life tend to also not look like Britta. Is that fair? Is that a fair statement?
Fair statement. Okay, now going judge based on just on looks.
Yeah.
Are you Annie or Britta?
I think sometimes it depends on the episode, but I do think that I'm probably more 60-40 Britta.
Mm-hmm. I think they're both beautiful young women, but head to head, I would be on Team Annie again.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of Annie is the costume that she wears. I just feel like that she's doing like the schoolgirl thing. Like she almost wears this, like Britta too, almost wears the same exact outfit every single episode of Community. That Britta is always wearing like a white T-shirt and a leather jacket, and Annie is always wearing like. Some sort of like, you know, a sweater, but then, you know, sort of like a tight shirt underneath the sweater. So it's, you know, it's take your pick.
Now, I'm not sure what this is going to say about me. Actually, I'm pretty sure what it's going to say about me. Now that they've been doing a couple episodes recently where Jeff and Britta are kind of a-holes.
Yes.
When Britta is an a-hole and not a do-gooder, I kind of like her more.
I like her more. Yeah. I don't like her when she's a sort of like a phony, like humanitarian. No, that is not an attractive look for anybody.
Right. So I'm not sure what that says about us, but
out of the two Annie sides, you know, they do like the sweet and innocent Annie. And then she turns into like badass Annie, where she's like beating people up or yelling at people. Which Annie do you like better?
Well, I'm going to use wrestling analogies because that's what I do. I don't know if you were watching wrestling back around 2004. Okay. I'm a big Trish Stratus fan.
Okay.
If I had to pick a TV girlfriend, it's Trish Stratus. which is sad because she's not on TV that often anymore.
Yeah.
Trish Stratus is a good guy, as a face. Wasn't half as attractive as Trish Stratus as a bad guy.
Ooh.
I don't know what that says about me again. But when, especially during Fistful of, or Handful of Paintballs, whatever it was called, Annie as the badass is leagues ahead of Annie as the good girl.
Yeah. It just seems fake, though, to me.
I can see that.
Yeah. What about, well, here's the real test about Annie is, do you watch The Mad Men?
I don't. That's again. We have had The Wire on DVD, the entire series for years, and every summer we're like, you know what? Sunday is Wire Day. That's what we're doing. We're just gonna every Sunday we're gonna plow through them. It never happens. Same with Mad Men. It's something that I've heard nothing but good things about. Just have never gotten around to watching.
Well, Annie is one of the characters' wives on Mad Men.
Yes,
and I have to say, I'm wondering if maybe the character of Annie. I'm sorry. What is her? The actress's name?
Alison Brie.
Alison Brie. I don't think that it's necessarily Alison Brie. I think it's the character, because when I watch her on Mad Men, I've never once said, oh man, Pete's wife is smoking. I never even realized that. I watched Community and said, oh, that girl looks very familiar. And then I put it together. And it's not that, you know, she was pregnant at one point, but it wasn't like she's not, like, they're not like uglying her up on Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if maybe it's the character and not the actress.
Well, it's possible. Although, I mean, Alison Brie has done a few photo shoots And again, don't want to. I know this. We're on the internet, and people can Google.
Right, right.
And I wouldn't encourage anybody to do something like this because you never know what you're going to get. But she has done some things with certain men's magazines, not to the level of Playboy thing. But there are pictures.
Really?
She has a very attractive figure.
Yeah.
Things along those lines. Again, I wouldn't encourage anybody to run out and check on that.
Okay.
But they've been downplaying things on the series.
Do you want to leave a Google break for the listeners at this point?
Yeah, I wouldn't dream of telling you how to run your podcast, Robert.
All right, you can always pause it.
Now, a lot of people have been into this podcast for a while. I would feel bad if you were a Survivor fan and were hoping for more Survivor. So that we do have a bit of Survivor community crossover.
Bring it all back together.
Right, bringing it all back together, full circle. My girlfriend had interviewed Gillian Jacobs.
Well, actually, can I give a little bit of a backstory?
Absolutely, go for it.
So way back when, I don't even remember how exactly this came up, of who sent the first tweet around, but there was like a Twitter chain between me, you, Dalton Ross, and one random guy. And somehow, maybe the random guy was the first person to bring this up about if Survivor was community, who would win? And we talked about doing a simulation of a season of Survivor with the community characters and who would win. And ultimately, I don't know if it was the kind of thing where it was just too geeky for anybody to actually do. I would have done it. And I used to do this kind of thing in the past. But I think that maybe it might have been the kind of thing where Nicole would just flat out leave me if I were to go to
She's
this,
not
this
gonna
point.
Listen to this, Rob.
Yeah, but she would see it on Twitter or whatever.
That's true.
She would hear about it.
You get ratted out by Rob's podcast.
By one of the live tweeters,
Taboo
yeah.
Buzzer.
Yeah, one of them.
Does the Taboo Buzzer have a
There
Twitter
is no yet? Live Twitter account yet for the Taboo Buzzer, but it does seem like a logical evolution.
Give it time.
It's the magnitude of of live tweeters. All right, so go ahead.
Okay, so had the opportunity to ask Gillian. Is it Gillian or Gillian Jacobs? The woman that
Gillian.
Woman that plays the role of Britta, who she thought, if all the community characters were in the game of Survivor, who would win?
Okay.
So just to give you a bit of a hint, she wasn't that familiar with the show. Like she knew like the basic overall. So if you're like, well, maybe she thought that Shirley would go to maybe she thought Shirley would find a Muti idol, I doubt she put that much thought into it or even knew the show Survivor well enough to think about that. So that being said.
Yeah. Are we just including the seven main cast members, not like Chang or anything like that?
She wasn't given any kind of barrier or any kind. So there is a wide variety of people to choose from.
Yeah. So if I were to give you a hint, yeah.
It's not like Starburns.
Okay. Well, thank you.
It's somebody you would see on the show often.
Well. This is very interesting because it's like, you have to think that Troy is a immunity threat, so he would have to be out. And Jeff is, on paper, seems like the guy who would certainly win. But
you would never want to go to Final Tribal with Jeff because he would bust out a speech and you would be second place.
Yeah, it would almost be like if they let Jeff get to the end of a Survivor season, you would almost talk about it like this season of how did they let Boston Rob get this far into the game? Was anybody not trying to get Jeff out? So you would have to think at some point somebody would think to get Jeff out. I could see Shirley being a first boot because she'd want to be so nice and not want to vote anybody out. And that tends to be how the early boots tend to go. Abed, I think, would be a real threat. I think he would be tough to get out because I don't think anybody would know he had some sort of an evil plan or some sort of a mastermind plan until it was too late. I think Pierce would be a great person to bring to the final two with you. And I think that Britta would probably get on people's nerves and she would probably be out pretty early, I think. And Annie, I could see being a real contender.
Annie, I could see being, this is how I would break it down with the starting seven. Annie, she's kind of got an Amber Berkich
Oh yeah, this would be fun. Let's make the actual survivor who they are in.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I'm giving Annie like an Amber Birkitch kind of thing where she would probably team up with somebody. Could make a long run for it. Troy, I'm seeing
well,
as like
in
an
in that scenario that we, if Jeff is the Boston Rob,
yeah,
then
there
yeah,
you go.
This is basically Survivor All Stars.
Okay, so Troy, I'm thinking of like an Ozzy.
I guess he would be good in the challenges, but I feel like
he could be outsmarted.
He's well. I think that Troy is more charismatic than Ozzy.
Abed, who's Abed? Because I feel like Abed is somebody who, if he voted you out, how mad at him could you be?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's just doing like he'd be very much. It's a game. It's a game. We're playing a game. Like that's kind of like his gimmick.
He'd sort of be the game bot, which makes me think Sash. But I don't know. I think people were mad at Sash.
People were very mad at Sash. Like if you remember, Brooklyn Dan, what was his name?
Dan.
Dan. Okay. Yeah. Hey, I got a name. yeah, Abed's a tough one.
Yay. yeah, I don't know if there's ever been a Survivor contestant like Abed.
Huh, that's one for the message boards. Who is Abed like?
Well, I would say the closest I'm not going to say it because it's could not be well received. But I think there is somebody who is like Abed who is not a Survivor player. But I think it's probably the closest we have to Survivor, but for the sake of not getting a firestorm, I won't say who it is.
That's your problem. Always trying to avoid those firestorms.
Yeah.
I fessed up that you were my least favorite Survivor. I don't see why you're not.
Yeah. I don't know if there's an Abed. I'm trying to think of who it could be. And nobody's jumping out, right now.
I'm kind of thinking of, what's the name of the gentleman who won Survivor China?
Todd. Todd is
in the sense that Todd came into the show saying, "I need this person, I need this person, I need that person," and then he just thought out so much in advance, which is how I feel Abed with the game. Not personality wise so much as far as their approach to the game.
Yeah,
like Abed would watch all 22 seasons. He'd say, "Well, this person won." Like he would do the math. This person won this way. Angela's the boss. he would really be able to go through it and figure it out. So I'm just from a strategic standpoint.
Yeah, and what was happening?
Right. And surely, I think there's a half dozen first boots that she's kind of just like.
Yeah. Anybody come to mind?
Somebody like I don't know, like Sonia. Like she's just like good natured and probably not ready to play like a real cutthroat game.
Yeah. Who's the Britta?
Oh goodness. Maybe
it's tough.
I'm also kind of thinking of the runner up for the first Survivor.
Kelly Wigglesworth
in that it's a person that did everything they thought was right.
Yeah.
But then at the end kind of got turned against and didn't understand why. I kind of feel like that would be Britta's thing. Because Britta always thinks she's doing what's right.
Yeah,
it's just always kind of odd.
Yeah,
other people. So that like not so much from a personality standpoint.
I think Britta's a little cuter than Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah, that I don't think we're debating that.
Okay. is there anybody that we left out?
We can talk about.
Oh, Pierce. Who's? I think Pierce is the Randy of Survivor.
Yes. The thing about Randy is if Randy had played the game after Nyanka played the game, Randy would go to the finals every time. Because people now think, I want to take the person that rubs people the wrong way to the end. Like, yeah. Randy, he just missed his... He played at the wrong time.
Yeah. If he's got to... Maybe he's got to go back again.
But, I mean, we could talk about Chang. We could talk about Dean Pelton.
All right, who's the Dean Pelton of Survivor?
Who pops in at like who do you never see and they pop in something ridiculous and they leave? Is that Michael Kelly?
I don't know.
Is that Fabio? Like you didn't see Fabio for a while, then he'd come in, pass out into the fire, fall out of a tree.
So we're not talking about the ambiguous sexuality of Dean Pelton that's not weighing into the equation.
That's a whole can of worms right there. I don't know if we want to.
Yeah. yeah, this idea was probably better on paper than. So who did Britta say was going to win Survivor?
Are you going to guess, or you just want to know?
Oh, I think I my guess would be Abed.
She chose Senior Chang.
Oh, I didn't even know he was in the running.
Okay. I said it's someone you see every episode. I didn't want you to be like, oh, well, clearly it's Starburns, or
yeah,
well, of course Fat Neil's going to win because you know he has all right. that.
So why Chang?
She said that she thought he was deceptive enough to be able to outsmart everybody.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, I do think he may have the best career out of any outside of Joel McHale. I think he might be the second biggest star of the Community cast after this summer.
He might be the second biggest star. I think, again, and this is because I love Troy, I could see him being this generation's Eddie Murphy. Like, I think he's got that kind of potential. If he hits the right movie role, like, you know, Trading Places or 48 Hours, like, he could be really big. He should stop rapping, though. He's not so much a good rapper. If you're just rapping, it's not good. Because he's like itty-bitty. Like, he's like the tiniest guy, and he's up there, and he kind of does like a hardcore rap. You know, dropping F-bombs and talking about sex with this person. It doesn't seem right coming out of Troy's mouth, but
yeah. Okay. Well, that's good stuff. Gordon, that this was a lot of fun. We got to talk about some Survivor. I got to talk about Community. I could do this, again next week. And it just, I don't know if we'd run out of things to talk about.
Nobody would want to listen to it, but
we would listen. That's the problem.
We need a podcast just you and me that we never put on the air,
like much like Troy and Abed.
Yes, there you go. Robin Gordon in the morning.
Sounds good. Anything you want to direct people to for anybody that might still be listening at this point?
Yeah. So for both of you still listening, XfinityTV.com. That's where you go for all your Survivor recaps, your power rankings with Sash. And your exit interviews. Also, my personal website is morewhatnot.com. Also, me and my girlfriend are in a bit of a Twitter war. And the fact she has way more Twitter followers than I do, and that just won't do. She's holding it over my head. It's embarrassing. So at gordonholmes.com, please feel free to follow me. I would appreciate it. Do not follow my girlfriend. I'm not going to give her a Twitter address so you don't get encouraged to like Stephen Fishbach did. Did I tell you this? I say... Oh, it's driving me nuts. My girlfriend's got so many more Twitter followers than me. And Fishbach's like, who is it? I'll follow her right now. Like, you don't get it.
Yes. Yeah. Please do not follow Gordon's girlfriend at Purple Kelly.
Right. Oh, damn it.
Oh, I did it too.
Damn it, Sister Nino.
Yeah. All right. Well, Gordon, thanks a lot, buddy. Good times. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a ton for having me.
And for appearing on Rob Has a Podcast today, Gordon Holmes will receive a copy of Dean Magazine, a one-year subscription. So congratulations, Gordon. Enjoy that in good health. And to everybody else, we're going to get ready to do some Celebrity Apprentice. We'll probably end up watching it tonight and then record a podcast come Monday night. So look for a Celebrity Apprentice podcast come Tuesday morning. And then we'll do the whole thing all over again next week. It's Survivor Finale week, so we'll talk to whoever gets booted from Redemption Island at a podcast about Survivor, and then we'll figure out exactly what we're going to do for the Survivor Live Finale 1 week from now. So it should be a lot of fun, and looking forward to it. Until next time, everybody, I will talk to you later. Bye.